From one islander to another, Isle of Wight Radio proudly presents John Hannam Meets.
Hi, and welcome to another John Hannam Meets. Today, I'm going to celebrate the life of the wonderful Windsor Davis, who died in early 2019. I interviewed him right back in 1995, backstage at the Mayflower Theatre, Southampton. So, it's back to that particular interview.
Another Hannam Archive.
Windsor, earlier in the show, I played one of your records just to plug the fact that you were appearing on my show today. Looking back on those years where you had a few records in the charts even, what are your memories?
Oh, that was fun. It was a lot of fun at the time. Most people would have given their eye teeth to do what I was doing at that time, because I used to feel so sorry for genuine musicians, career musicians, but they could hardly feel jealous of what I was doing. But one always felt that, you know, it would have been nice if they'd had the slots. But at the same time, most of the pros were great. The ones I talked to, they were all great. They said it was no competition, because it was in the novelty slot. There's always room for the novelty bag, as they call it. And I was absolutely delighted to be involved in all that. It was great fun, you know. I mean, I've never, ever imagined. Well, one does. It's the sort of thing one does imagine. That you would be in there, you know, talking about EMI Studios, where the great Beatles and dear old Wally Ridley and people of that ilk, you know, who were very involved. And I tend to repeat myself. We've chatted a few times, I know, John. But on one occasion, my daughter, you have your dear daughter Caroline here now, charming young lady. And when she was about, Beth was about 14 at the time, I think, and a bit depressed. You know, things were not going too well at school or something. And she had a little day off. I said, well, let's make it a proper day off. Let's go up to town, you see. So we went up to town, and I said I had a little job to do. I played the part of a frog that went, you might say, very natural, but it was, or something of that nature, in a film that was made by the Beatles. And as we got out of the lift at Apple, as it was then, I think, and who should be standing there, believe it or not, have a guess. The Beatle himself, right? Who is it? Can you tell me?
John Lennon.
John Lennon, no less. Well, Beth's eyes nearly fell out on the lift. I mean, I was on the floor myself. And he said, hello, Windsor. I mean, I've never met him. Hello, Windsor. Nice to see you, mate. Thanks for doing it. And I mean, what a gentleman. What a lovely one. My Beth, he said, now, who is this young lady? And I introduced him to Beth. And he said, well, I tell you what, I'll look after Windsor, he said. I'll take a round to see the studios, and then I'm going for a cup of coffee. And you can have one in the studio, he said, but I don't have to work, you see, today. So he took, we were all round the studios. I mean, this was being escorted by John Lennon himself. One of the lovely things of the business, you know. And like I say, these little things come up occasionally, and all that bit, that singing bit. I met so many lovely people. Norrie Paramore, the lovely old band leader, and Sonny no longer with us, but great, great fun it was. And I never felt the people were pressurizing me, because they knew I wasn't a musician. As I said, and will continue to say, the only Welshman who admits he can't sing. Right.
You had such an interesting past. You were a coal miner for a while.
Yes, that's right. The shortest possible time, 4 years, as a matter of fact. The idea was I would become a mining engineer, and I was in the valleys where it all happened, of course. We had three pits in our village. Well, two pits and one level, which is a pit that goes under the mountain, you know, a straight, more like a tunnel. And the idea was that I went to the Wyndham Colliery, the Wyndham pit at the time, and I was to become a mining electrical engineer. But we had to do our course, first of all, and work down the pit and try working at the face and so on for a short time. And then we were installing machinery underground when I came to the electrical engineering side of it. But it was, as I said, dark, dirty and dangerous. Something like some of the theatres. Oh, yes, it's. But no, I hasten to add that at the moment I'm working in a lovely theatre, but we won't go into that, because that would be plugging and we're not here for that. It was the sort of thing, it took me a while to realise that it wasn't for me. And I know these ideas get cooking in your head, don't they? And I think I was looking for a kind of escape from the mines, to begin with. And although I had some marvellous friends there, and at that time everything was happening in the valleys, you know, the Eisteddfods in the local chapels, and wonderful memories, John, and a very busy sort of existence, because I was eventually taking a day off a week and travelling to the School of Mines in Treforest. Well, I got through the first 2 years of the course, and then I thought, oh no, you know, this is not for me. And just as well, because all my dear old pals down in South Wales there, you know, Jim Twist and all the boys with the nicknames, were saying to me at the time, what are you, you're leaving the pit to go school teaching, the idea was. And I wasn't dedicated enough to be a school teacher, I must confess. I found that later. I thought it was a nice, as we used to say, a clean clothes job, you know. But it requires a great deal of dedication, and had I been a little more mature, perhaps, at the time, I would have said, no, that's not for me. You don't go into a job just because there are long holidays, ordinary money, nice clean clothes to go to work, and it's much more serious than that, unfortunately. And although I enjoyed the company of the kids very, very much, I realised after a while, it's very difficult to pretend I'm a dedicated actor as such, because dedication is something one associates with great artists. And I must admit, although I've loved what I'm doing, I suppose that's, and I do honestly, I can say this quite honestly, that I try very hard, but every actor I know does, or he's not working. But, and I've enjoyed it tremendously, but I don't know how far it would take me if somebody says, well, you've got to give up this, that, and whatever. I've never been a seeker after great fortune, great prestige or anything. I think a good job well done is just about the best thing anybody can do anyway, you know?
Why did you decide to go into the theatre?
Well, my wife kicked me into it. No, it's funny because when I was teaching, I always got involved in those two things. It was rugby. I enjoyed tremendously in the days in the valleys when we could play rugby in Wales, you know. And we're trying to come back a bit now, please God. But the thing was that I'd been doing amateur dramatics and playing rugby, and they didn't mix very well, of course. You come on with a black eye, you know, in the second act, or start reciting lines in the script. But I was always doing my bit with the local amateurs, and we were in Leek in Staffordshire at the time. I was teaching there in Mountside Boys' School, and my wife said to me, we did a thing called Harlequinade, the two plays, and one of them was Harlequinade, and I was in that, and she said, do you know, she said, I watched you tonight, and it wasn't bad, but she said, I don't think you'll ever be happy, this is my wife talking, if you never try to be an actor, a full-time, you know, professional. And my heart gave a sort of lurch. I said, well, I haven't been keeping anything from you, but I suppose you're right. And that's when it was. I mean, I didn't know anyone in the game at all. So I started writing off. I think, you know, some of the letters may have reached stage doorkeepers and things, you know, in a dark theatre, you know, when nothing was going on. So who's this then? Who's that then? Who's this bloke? But eventually I had an interview with Miriam Brickman. I think I've mentioned this before to you, at the Royal Court Theatre, and it sort of started there. I was given a lift into a season of rep at the Cheltenham Everyman Theatre, who David Giles was running, and a marvellous guy called Jerry Brainy. And he sort of helped me along. He said, oh, you'll be all right. And I got, you know, character parts pretty quickly, because with a face like mine, and I always looked about 48 when I was 21, you know. So they didn't, instead of dipping the young lads in the company, instead of dipping their heads into flour or something, I looked old enough to play the heavies. And I was getting quite good parts, you know, even though I was supposed to be carrying pianos, but I did a bit of that as well, and moving furniture, assistant stage management, sort of bit. And eventually I came back to London, and I was standing in the office, paying a courtesy call to Miriam Brickman, who was, as I told you, the casting director of the Royal Court Theatre. It was a very exciting time at the Royal Court. And John Dexter, the great director, walked in and said, ah, Mr. Davis will do very well for The Tramp. And I thought, thank you very much, sir. You know, I didn't say anything. He said, I want you to a lovely play, he said, and it's called The Kitchen. And it was being done at the time, but Bob Stevens was coming out of it. Sir Robert, I believe now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Not late. And Jeremy Brett was taking over. And indeed, I went in as The Tramp, which was a lovely cameo. And that's where it started. Well, you know, that's where my London experience started. And that was only a limited season. But then John Dexter, God bless him, said, now I want you to do a part in a very funny play, working with Mervyn Johns and lovely crowd of actors. And it's our next play at the Royal Court, and it's called The Keep. Well, it was a wonderful success. And I was so lucky to get that early. But then again, it all fell to pieces. You see, I thought I'd cracked it, you know, John. You know the old story. I had the most horrendous experience, which people seem to have forgotten now, about going into television. I'd come back from rep, and I'd done the two bits at the Royal Court, and my agent then just said, somebody wants to see you for a small part in a thing called Probation Officer. Now, I'm going back many years, many years. And this person said, I went along and I met a producer, and he said, very good, we'd like you to do this part, and et cetera, et cetera. And when I got back to my home, I had a phone call from my agent saying, they want you to play the probation officer. And I was taken over from John Paul, a very fine actor who'd got out for whatever reasons. And I found myself plonked in front of this camera. And although I say it myself, I think, to be fair, it had run its course. But I was doing a sort of all right job, but I'd stepped in from nowhere. And it just didn't take, you know. And after that, I thought, never count your chickens late. It was a disaster, really, because to come in and be so well known, I had headline news, new probation officer takes over, old one does go whatever, goes his way and all that. And I thought, gosh, I was scared stiff. I had to be, guys, I'd never seen a television camera. And there I was doing the bit. And although I said I did about five episodes and the series came to a close, so I closed a television series. But there you go, I thought that was death. I thought that was it. Back to teaching or even minding, you know, but I was lucky.
John Hannam goes on location.
My current guest is the incredible Windsor Davis. We're looking back on incredible. His early career.
Three Arms.
Theatre. Started in TV. Then you did things like New Scotland Yard, Sam, The Main Chance, Callan. Do you remember those?
Oh, yeah, just about. Edward Woodward's done so well, hasn't he? My word, I catch him on late night television from the States. A very nice man. But a lot of those were, they look good when you put them down. Had some nice character parts. But when you do one episode in a series, it's very hard to remember what you did. I think I was an assistant police constable or something. It was very, but they were all great fun. I met some wonderful people in the old days, Jack Warner, and Dixon of Dock Green, all the boys in Z cars. And I worked with some great guys too, with Charlie Drake.
Were you a toughie in those days?
Oh, did all that bit. Oh, yes, did all that bit. Yes, acted the gangsters and the hard coppers and whatever. And I don't know where I'm going now. I mean, what can I do now? I had a lot of fun.
How did the big chance come, really, for It Ain't Our Fault, Mum? I mean, 1973 to 1981, incredible run, really.
Yes, it was, and it had tremendous effect. Of course, the big laugh was that I only went down to see this thing and one or two actors had turned the part down. And by sheer accident, Jimmy Perry said to me, because Jimmy Perry and David Croft, the producer, have all these marvellous successes like Heidi High and...
You Rang My Lord?
You Rang My Lord and Are You Being Served? Dad's Army. I mean, they're amazing. However, I was asked to read this bit of the Sergeant Major.
And I sort of did it like that, John, because that was a standard Sergeant Major.
And he said, just a minute, you're Welsh, aren't you? Why don't you do a Welsh Sergeant Major? And I immediately thought of old Morgan M.M., who came from the top of the... Who was an archetype. I thought, why didn't I do this the first time around?
Well, I love you, boy. Chest out, chin in. Thank you, long chin with trousers, boy. Pretty well.
And he had the wax moustache a lot, you see. And I did that bit, and they said, that's fine, That's a... So I got home, they said, yes, they'd like to play the Sergeant Major, which was, over the moon. And it immediately shot into, the ratings. I was so delighted with that because it came at a time when things were slightly dark. I mean, they weren't terrible because I was getting more work, bits and pieces, but this really established me, as it were, for the public. And I've never looked back. I think it's wonderful.
Were you surprised by the success that you had?
I took my son to Crystal Palace in enduring memory, I mean, Crystal Palace, you know, but don't say anything about them, I love them. We went there, and the very, very first, I happened to throw the term lovely boys in, and somebody in the crowd shouted it had only been on for the first time, that Wednesday or whatever it was, and on Saturday, somebody shouted, come on, you lovely boys, to the team, in a lull, you know, and my son looked at me, and the crowd laughed. I thought, wow, you know. I mean, and the recognition was astounding. Television is unbelievable when it comes to getting your face known. Sometimes it can't, not after doing probation officer. I'd have buried my head somewhere anywhere. But it was a great time. Again, a big cast, you see, so you can't take too much credit. I was very lucky in getting the villain's part, the one with the black hat, as they say, because the villains are far less... are much more watchable, aren't they? The threat, as it's called. Otherwise, all those lovely boys and their officers would have had a happy time just being concert party individuals. But the threat was always there that they'd be sent up the jungle.
You were almost, well, you were a national sort of hero in a way, weren't you? I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, it was curious, that, wasn't it? I don't know whether it was the time, but, I mean, I think if you give people a good laugh, it's half the battle, and I'm sure so many other people in series have felt the same thing. But I suppose it was a kind of... after the war, you know, things were coming... Well, I mean, it's 20 years after the war, but maybe people of that ilk wanted a bit of a reminder of what the old days were like, and particularly the servicemen. They took to it, hook, line and sinker. And it was lovely when one or two of the guys said, you weren't that far out playing your sergeant major, you know, because they're all extrovert characters anyway. Well, they have to be, don't they? So I was lucky.
Then came Never the Twain with Donald Sinden.
Yes, my dear, what an experience that was. Oh, my dear, I can assure you this was great fun. But Donald's a great character. He's lovely, you see, because he applies himself so hard to his work, and he loves the theatre. But he's done films with Clark Gable and Grace Kelly, and you know, Doctor in the House or whatever it was. He's marvellous stuff, and a tremendous theatrical star. I hate the word star, actually. I said a great actor for me. And he's done his Lear, and I saw him doing a wonderful one-man show as Oscar Wilde. And, oh, you know, lumps in the throat, tea, not a dry eye in the house, as they said. And he's a lovely man with a great raconteur. And he was, as I think I did mention this to you, he usually rings me up if there's a Welsh rugby match on and just says, my dear, there's some sort of ball game going on. I thought you might like to see it on television, you know. And but a wonderful character to work with. Well, we wouldn't have worked that length of time together if it hadn't been good, you know. And we had a few laughs. He came to my daughter's wedding and gave us a nice present, you know.
And it was so different, wasn't it? The series was so different.
Well, yes, indeed. That, again, I think, had some more time to run, but I'm glad we left it when it was riding high. You didn't want to... I mean, because everything has a sell-by, you know. And... I do believe that we got quite a bit out of it. I think it was on 11 years, you know, and enough what was nine. So who's grumbling, you know? We're very, very fortunate.
You've also been seen with Alexis Sale more recently, haven't you?
Oh, yes, that was good fun, too. It's nice to keep up with the young chaps. And that came out of the blue because my daughter, now I can tell you this, is a casting director, which means that she chooses people to play in different parts for television. And it's no secret that she never chooses me. I don't know why, but Jane, seriously, she's lovely because we get on so well. I've got four daughters, and most people know this, and a son, but Janie is the one who, by a roundabout method, all on her own, came in to be a casting director. And she loves the theatre, and she loves people, actors, whatever, and she works very, very hard. I used to despise the thought of casting directors, you know, deciding your fate, you know, but it's nothing's easy, as we all know. But we've always been scared of each other because obviously if she chooses me, I've got to work twice as hard to prove something. And she has to do the same thing, and she's sweating for me and I'm sweating for her. So I can honestly say that I never worked for Jane. And we understand this. We're great, you know. This makes our relationship very easy. But they had a chat round a table, apparently. This was the last series, last year.
Yeah.
And they said, we're going to put Alexi in this thing called Paris, et cetera, et cetera. And the two Irish lads, marvellous guys, who wrote this series, which I thought was great, I think it was way ahead of its time, and marvellous, they said, We were thinking in terms of Charles Sr., Windsor Davis. Of course, Jane apparently went blue in this. She didn't blush. She went blue in it. And one of her friends said, well, I think you ought to know that's Jane's dad. And these boys said, oh, well, that's okay then. Lovely. And she said, well, we don't often, you know. She said, well, no, but, you know, what's? Because the producer chimed in. So, no, so that's fine. We all understand that. And much to our discomfiture, I was in it. But she stayed away, you know, and all that. And thank God, I mean, I loved every minute of it. And I think he's such a smashing guy, that man. He's got so much talent, it's not true. And everybody in that show, and it was a real, I mean, I think it had some problems coming in new. In the old days, you either got ratings, you know, by the time it had finished, or not at all. And I'm sure there are great series. I believe I'm right in saying that some of the great series like Stepstone and Son was not liked when they came out first. Mm. So I was very sorry. I don't think they're doing any more. I do hope they are, but they haven't been in touch. No, I was only a one-off, I swear.
You can't beat Sunday afternoon sitting down, listening to the radio and listening to John Hannam talk to the stars. He knows them all, you know.
I'm currently with Windsor Davis. We talked about his great TV series, but I want to talk a wee bit about movies, because you've made a few movies.
Oh, yes.
You made one with Barbara Windsor. They keep on showing, didn't you?
Oh, right, yeah. Well, the laugh about that is that everybody thinks I was in 24 carry-ons, but the point about it is they cut them all. I was in two. They cut them all up and they paste them into other bits and pieces, and then they say, oh, you did a lot of carry-ons, Windsor, didn't you? And I was only did the job. Great time, Kelly the Corner. What an actor he was. Brilliant actor. They were all so good, you see. Barbara and those people, and they were like a rep company, but they really welcomed you in. There was no way to, dear old Bernard Breslau, you know. And they were a great crowd. I loved that lot. And it was a joy to do. And I'm only sad that they don't do any. But there again, I do think, you see, that things have their time, don't they?
That's right.
And yeah. You must say, thank God for the good times. Count your blessings. I've had a few, believe me. So there was no... it would be great fun to do some more, but I think they had their day and they were lovely.
You made films about Hitler and Frankenstein?
Oh, yes. Oh, indeed, yes. Frankenstein must be destroyed. Oh, Jimmy. And one that springs to mind was The Arabesque, funnily enough, with Gregory Peck and Sophie Loren. And we took over Booker Aerodrome, and it was the coldest night for centuries. I mean, it was diabolical. And this is a lesson for everybody who thinks that show business is glamour. You know, it was awful. The temperature was awful. Of course, you throw a few overcoats on while you're waiting to do something. But I only had about two lines. And if you ever see Arabesque, which is still doing the rounds on television and so on, you see this policeman in a car that crashes. And I say, watch it, Bert, or something like that. And that's it. And I always remember that because Stanley Donen was the director. And we had a marvellous guy called Joe Wadham, who was a stunt driver. And we were in the studio. We were called, I think it was a Sunday, into the studio to do this shot. And we were in one end of the studio. And the idea was that because Gregory Peck, which we already done that terrible cold night, was riding his bike on a motorway, which was the last thing you're supposed to, because he was under the influence of drugs, not alcohol. You see, it was all thriller stuff, you know. And he caused a crash, nothing disastrous, but everybody concertinaing, you know, into everybody else, pile-up job. And we were the police car. The sort of black humour bit was that the copper was the last one to get hit. And we had to hit this big Bentley. Well, you know what the size of the old-fashioned big Bentley is. But they wanted a close-up of the impact. And then they were going to pull back and show the white car with police written on it. So they got us into the studio, and Joe Wadham sat in the back. And Stanley, or somebody, please, I must be very careful what I say, but somebody said to Stanley, now, oh, come on, Joe, let's make it a good job, okay? We want a good crack. And he said, cheeky. You know, you all right there, Wins? I said, yeah, fine. He said, well, let me just strap you in properly. So I was strapped in like I couldn't move. And we started at one end of the studio. And we got to the other, and I could see this Bentley, which they nailed a sleeper in front of it, a huge railway sleeper. They nailed it to the floor so it couldn't, you know, it wouldn't go shooting through the wall of the studio. And we hit that with a bonnet came up. There was glass everywhere. My hat came off with the impact, but not a scratch on anybody, except that the car was in a terrible mess. And I'll always remember that. Joe saying, "Is that all right?" And there was a deathly hush. "Yeah, that's fine." But that was, again, it was quite a little adventure for its time. You know? I mean, I never dreamt I'd be doing a stunt in a film. But you do, oh, and on that very, very cold night, I became aware of how hard the business was. There was Gregory Peck, you know, freezing with a thin overcoat on. They draped him in everything they could find. But when he had to be seen pushing this bike, oh, and I remember waiting. I was the only thing that kept me warm was the fact that I was standing about 3 feet away from a big star. And I just said, "It's very cold, isn't it? Can you imagine saying that? What an inane comment." You know, I mean, there were icicles all, you know, all around us. I said, "It's very cold." He said, and he looked at me sort of strange. He said, "Yeah." So he spoke to me.
You've also done the Rocky Horror Show recently on stage.
Oh, yeah, that was great fun. Yeah, I enjoyed that. You can come back at them in that one. Yeah. And you don't have to be too polite either. I mean, you have children in the audience in pantomime, but that's a different kettle of fish. It was great. That's an amazing show, you know. I mean, the music is catchy, and I love that rock and roll bit, you know. But the point of it all was all these people go to see it, dressing up, cross-dressing. I mean, policemen and rugby players. I mean, I can't believe it. And I got me worried at first, but it's got devotees. I've had people coming to me all around this country since they knew I was in it saying, "When are you doing it next? Because, sir, I understand they're coming. There's another one coming and we're going again." So it's one of those things. It goes on and on. Jonathan Morris, by the way, Jonathan Morris was superb. And I've known Jonathan a long time. He really is a some performer, that boy.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to John Hannam Moots.
I'm currently with Winder Davis. We're looking, we look back on his amazing career and talk about the future. What's next? I mean, you've got a summer season, hopefully?
Well, yes, people are talking about a summer season. I'd never say too much before, unless it's down on paper. But I am doing a 7-week tour of, guess what? Run for Your Wife Once More. I've done about 500 performances of that. But it's a stayer, you see, it's a good show. That's Ray Cooney's play, of course. And I've worked with Ray many times. And indeed, I never tire of it because he gets such a good reception again. People say to me very often, "You know, John, don't you get fed up doing the same thing night after night?" But if you're getting so much comeback, it's like if you do pantomime, you get so much comeback that it makes it worthwhile. The audience make it for you. And I'll never forget, somebody said to me, "When you go and see Run for Your Wife, don't go thinking you're going to be in it. Just listen to the crowd. Don't pass opinions. Don't forget what you're going to be doing in it. If you do it, listen to the audience, watch the audience." And they are rolling about. And I mean, Ray's got a marvellous technique. He never stops work, you know. When he's directing, I mean, he'll give you a note on stage if he's in it. You know, I mean, he's wonderful. Don't go down quite so low. You'll hear him say, "Don't step over there." Don't. And he's lovely. He's such a lovely man. Only he could get away with it, I think. But Britt Eklund's in this one, and apparently they're going potty over because she's such a lovely lady and very, very popular. So dear old Wince can go in on the back trailer, so to speak.
Away from showbiz, you like bird watching too.
Well, I did used to do a bit because that was very easy to do. And, you know, a pair of binoculars and a book. And I did a lot, especially around the on the coasts, you know. And it's amazing the number of birds you see in your garden. We have a woodpecker that comes every year. I'm wondering if this is the same woodpecker, but maybe. But he's been there for a few years now. And, no, I can recommend that because it is good fun. The only trouble is you've got to spend a lot of time. I don't go into classification and all that because just identify them. That's good enough for me, you know. And I really enjoy that. And I like walking a great deal, and so does my wife. So, we have to get away from the kids now. And... I'm seeing her this weekend because I'm working at the moment, and we're going to do a little bit of walking in the New Forest, I think. So,
one big ambition for Winter Davis. What would you like to do?
Well, I'm not an ambitious man, and if you're talking about this business, I think I'd love to do. I like television. I mean, this is God's truth. I love the theatre. I love it. I'd love to do a little more serious theatre, and I might be doing some of that. But I love television. And I love television series. I love comedy. That's my particular, I think, forte in television. I'd love to do more funny TV. But one day, who knows? You know, something will come along. And if it doesn't, I'm, thank God, very busy and still enjoying it, John.
Do you go back to the valleys at all?
occasionally. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. When I think of that place, it's all so clean, neat and quiet. You know, at the top end of the valley was always quiet, where my dear old grandmother, 99 she was, used to keep chickens and for the table. And I believe you, me, in those days, a chicken, you never had a chicken for dinner, nobody, but nobody. And the taste, because they were free range, obviously, the taste of a chicken at Christmas was unbelievable. We never, turkeys were something we heard about on when we went to the movies, when we went to Ogmore Hall, you know, to see the movies, they used to have something called Thanksgiving. But my word, these chickens, but she used to keep them, and she was marvellous with animals, my grandmother, and she'd speak Welsh to them. She'd tell them, Mavanwy, come here, Mavanwy, you know, Dyna Bwyd, here's the food. And she was about, she lived to be 99, and, but every Christmas, those chickens, boy, would come on, Mavanwy. They didn't know where they were going, but they were running around without heads for a while. She'd do all her own, all plucking the feathers, the whole lot. And one year, somebody gave her a goose. I'll never forget this, John. There was going to be a big treat, this was. And a chicken takes no time to cook. And we had those big open fires, those big hobs, you know. A goose wouldn't go in an oven. But this one, she had a spring-loaded hook, you know, that the meat hook that goes right, you wind it up, and it goes, turns very slowly in front of the fire. You just hang it on this hook, you see. And there was this monster goose, just mildly sweating after about an hour. And we were sweating too. We were so hungry. We ate about 7:30 at night. And it was still blood inside it. You know, oh gosh, it was so funny, that dear old Gran. What a marvellous person she was.
Actually, my son's at university in Treforest.
Really? Amazing. Well, that's a coincidence, because it's in Treforest where the School of Mines was.
Amazing.
God gracious me. So, and of course, no School of Mines now. Durham University was the famous place we all aspired to. If you could get there, that was going to be it. You know, you'd be a colliery manager in no time at all. No bits. It's amazing.
Windsor Davis, thank you very much for talking to me.
Are we finished? Oh, my word. I could talk to you all day, brother.
It's a great pleasure to meet you once again.
You too, and your lovely daughter.
Thank you.
John Hannam is on the air now. Hannam? Hannam? It doesn't matter. He's a lovely boy.
And that rather special voiceover has been played on this show since the interview recorded in 1995. Today, we've celebrated the life of a great actor and a marvellous man, Windsor Davis. He'll be much missed. You've been listening to John Hannah Meets, courtesy of Isle of Wight Radio. Don't forget to look at my website, johnhannam.com, for news of more interviews and how you might purchase my books. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye for now. He'll be much missed.